Chief O'Reilly, is there anything else we can do before the lunch hour here?
The only thing left, the failure to report cases are not here. Item 11, if there are any, or item 10.
Now, so this was advertised and they were summoned to appear at the noon hour.
That would be it then.
That would be it.
Yep.
Well, how about we recess here for a slightly extended lunch hour and reconvene at 12:30.
I do have one thought.
Yes, Chief.
If we have about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think we do.
Since repeat offenders are going to come up again on the agenda as an item, I thought it might be good to inform the commission on just what has taken place. Based on last month's cases, it was a little bit awkward, at least from a staff perspective, on a few of the cases as to that were charged under 28.2.528 on how the commission was presented the information, where I think it mainly was a situation where one individual had offenses that occurred all in one day. Another individual had offenses that occurred over several time periods. And, you know, really staff was not thinking of that as a difference because the guidelines, which I want to talk about for a minute, the guidelines that were developed by the Law Enforcement Subcommittee really are in reference to Section 28.2.232 of the Code of Virginia. So clearly, you know, there'll have to be some changes there. One change that has been made, law enforcement and fisheries management met. Fisheries management met with Colonel Waterman, Lieutenant Colonel Rhodes, and I and a few of my staff met. And what we decided was that the officer will be making the case, presenting the case information to you as he has done before. But the recommendation, which is really developed by fisheries management, will be handled by fisheries management. That should help because the process that we go through, just to give you a little information, is almost immediately following this commission meeting for the October meeting, fisheries management and law enforcement will sit down to determine which cases will come for the October meeting. So it's done that quickly after this meeting or any meeting. So there is correspondence at that point, and it's often the case what all of us have seen is that the officer doesn't necessarily have familiarity with the recommendation. He's had the case, he has the details of the case, and that's why we're going to proceed to that approach. The other thing I wanted to mention is just the history, very briefly. I'll stay within 10 minutes, but the law enforcement division developed the repeat offenders provisions for the commissioner's guidelines back in 1996. And they were fine. Things were different back in 1996 until about 2008 in terms of we didn't have a lot of cases that came before the commission. Mainly, oysters were not in demand the way they have been, and the level of poaching and theft and everything else was certainly not something that was an everyday occurrence. So what happened in 2013 is then Commissioner Travelstead convened a law enforcement subcommittee, which was comprised by commission members. Ms. Haney was one of those members, and also fisheries management and law enforcement. But what I wanted to tell you was, in case you had an idea that staff has been responsible for everything, not at all. The process was that each committee the commission has, the Shellfish Management Committee, the Blue Crab Committee, the Finfish Management Advisory Committee, they were all part of the process. They were all given surveys to help figure out what the sanctions should be for various penalties, whether it was crab, recreational fishing, oysters, whatever it may be. That information was then also taken into account with the law enforcement captains from every area, because when you think about it, it's the industry and law enforcement which has the proximity to everything that's going on out on our waters. So there was a very elaborate, I wouldn't expect that any of you had a chance to read the full subcommittee report, but it was a very well-designed process. The commissioner has, of course, I know. And it culminated in staff from law enforcement and fisheries being able to have guidelines for you. And they are guidelines. We've had a couple of occurrences where the commission has said, well, wait a minute, why is staff saying this is just a probation when, in fact, this seems worse than that? It should be a one-year suspension. Now, the commission has that purview. That's up to the commission to look at the guidelines they have for 282-232 cases and, you know, take action as they see it should be done. What's still going to be left, and you're going to see it today a little bit, is that the tables that are in your books, tables 4 to 7, which provide the guidelines, they don't encompass all the situations that we find. We still have situations where there have been violations, natural resource violations, where they're not captured in those tables. And they still have to be in a situation where it's three offenses that win someone appearance before the commission for those offenses. So there still is a little bit of that old system. And I think one of the intentions of both fisheries and law enforcement will be, once we see some of these cases that aren't captured by the tables, we will move to get the commission to accept new cases that can be captured by the tables and be treated that way. So a little bit about Section 282.528. I was in a meeting with former Commissioner Travelstead with the Seafood Council, and the Seafood Council was very perturbed, upset, I mean, really, you know, about this oyster poaching and what can be done. And I had my code book, and I read aloud Section 282.528, and all of a sudden it was, where did that come from? And we all realized that we did have an instrument that was very powerful. But what I want to let you know again is we really don't have essential guidelines, and that's something that I think the commission perceived last month, that, you know, we'll have to meet with law enforcement, and together we'll have to now look at 528 differently. Just then, it's an automatic 1 year, or it's an automatic 6 months to 2 years. You know, we'll have to talk that over, and the commission, of course, will have to indicate what its findings are. So we've come a long way since 1996. The big dodge back then, and which the reason we didn't have a lot of cases, was you had to have 3 court convictions in a 12-month period to appear before the commission. So all the individual had to do was to get a stay, get a postponement of his case, and all of a sudden the 12 months are history. So there's been a lot of progress, and I thank you for allowing me to take the time to sort of give you a little summary. So thank you.
Any questions to the chief? Mr.
Has there been any consideration that maybe some people from some of the fishing organizations be involved in those? And the reason I say that is sometimes we, as prosecutors or those type of things, take one kind of a view of these offenses. And I might say that, and when we're talking about 282.528, it talks about, you know, any person convicted, like take their license for 6 months. And for us in public service, you know, we get a paycheck regardless, okay? But a person who is, his whole life is fishing or oystering or whatever as a waterman, and you take his license for 6 months, I mean, to us, that might not seem like a much of a time, but to a person that's their only livelihood, like myself, if I lost my law license for 6 months, that would be an astronomical amount of money. And so if we have the fishing organization, or at least give them an opportunity to participate in these committees where we're coming up with these recommendations, that might provide an extra set of eyes in there that would balance the scales of between being fair and being enforcement-wise. And has that been given in consideration?
It was done. So, again, what we did was for – we have committees, and the representative on the Finfish Management Advisory Committee representation, the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and the Shellfish Committee. They are all designed to have geographical differences as far as, you know, to represent different areas within the tidewater area, and also, in some cases, different gear types. Finfish, of course, has recreational and commercial, as well as NGO type of participation. Crab Committee is mostly commercial, has had some recreation in the past, does have an NGO there, and Shellfish is pretty much all commercial representation. But that's the heart of those particular industries. They received a survey. They were the ground floor of this process. They received a survey, and I think there's a summary. I know there's a summary in the final report, and they rated which offenses should receive which type of sanction on a severity basis. It was they who started things off. The next part after that was to go to law enforcement and make sure that all the different, the four areas of law enforcement, they had their ratings. Together, each one was about 50% weighting to get the final determination. Because, again, those are the two components of the industry that are most familiar with it. So we did go through that. I would suspect that could be something to be repeated in time. But really, when you talk to those in the industry who are on the committees, they're pretty adamant that, you know, there needs to be penalties, and the penalties don't need to be nice.
Yeah, and just the commercial watermen were the ones who wanted the more strict penalties. And so these penalties on these oyster violations, they're the ones that really requested and are actually demanding. They're pretty much fed up with poaching.
I think that's a good point to get out to the public because, you know, when I first came on the commission, I wasn't aware of all this, and I look at it, you know, me being a prosecutor kind of thing, but I think that's very important for the public to know. This is the public asking for these penalties, because I always question you guys where you come up with a recommendation from, and to me it makes a big difference that the industry says, hey, you know, we've got to put a stop to this, and we're asking for this, as opposed to a government agency. And so that's very impressive to me. I just wish we could get the word out to a lot of the people. That's where it come from.
I can say from my perspective that staff devoted a lot of work and a lot of discussion over the span of probably about 5 or 6 months here with all the advisory committees here to come up with guidelines that kind of made some sense. The ones that are most egregious in the eyes of both the industry, recreational, commercial, and law enforcement have really pretty much, they've been ranked. And a lot of work went into that. But there's still guidelines, and the commission can deviate from them in whatever way we desire. But it was a comprehensive effort to put this on some sort of logical framework. And I can get you a copy of that law enforcement subcommittee report, and I think we have the some additional information as well. Any other questions or comments or discussions? Well, let's break for lunch and reconvene at 12:30 to take up repeat offenders and other fishery matters. So, till 12:30. Reconvene the September 23rd meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. We are at agenda item number 10, repeat offenders here. Officer, who's going first? Captain Rose. Were you here this morning where I swore in staff?
Swear
in?
Sure, I was.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, then. You're still under oath.
Yes, sir.
Who's first, sir?
Okay, this is going to be for Mr. Randy Harding.
First of all, good afternoon, Commissioner Bull and Commission members. I'm Captain Jim Rose. I'm the supervisor of the Northern Area, and I'm here this morning to present a case concerning Darwin Hardy. This case was tried in Northumberland County General District Court, and Mr. Hardy was found guilty on the charge under the Authority Code 28.2-201, Regulation 4 VAC 20, 1230-31, transport oysters without an approved temperature control storage. Mr. Hardy appealed this case to the Northumberland County Circuit Court and was found guilty and a fine of $50. Suspended with 1 year probation that Mr. Hardy not to commit any oyster violations for a period of 1 year. Excuse me. On May the 29th, 2014, at approximately 4:40 p.m., officers Johnson and Franklin arrived at Cockrell's Marine Railway on the Little Wicomico River in Northumberland County. Both officers observed a truck operated by Randy Harding. The truck maneuvered over to the dock and offloaded 30 bags of marketable size oysters. It was noticed by both officers that the truck did not have any type of refrigeration. Mr. Harding stated that he harvested the oysters from cages and transported them to this location. The officers explained then to Mr. Harding that it was unlawful to transport any shellfish during this particular time of year after 11 a.m. without an approved temperature storage device. Officer Franklin issued Mr. Harding a summons for the violation. The officers transported the oysters to a patrol vehicle and then on to a patrol vessel. The oysters were placed overboard on an oyster reef in the Great Wicomico River. During this entire process, Mr. Harding was very cooperative.
Any questions from the commission?
Yes,
Mr. Cesar.
Maybe you could educate me a little bit about what is the harm to the public for transporting these kind of oysters without the refrigeration?
Well, it's a health issue this particular time of the year, being not on refrigeration, oysters and shellfish. We're not certain when they were harvested that morning or that night, and they were probably going to market that afternoon and being in the sun. I believe the temperature even back then on that date was around 61 degrees, but it is a health issue.
How long would it take an oyster to, I use the word, spoil under those type of temperatures?
I can't answer that, sir.
Mr. Cesar, here, I'd like to call Fisheries Chief Rob O'Reilly to the stand here. He can address some of the fishery matters and the biology issue.
Okay. I think what Captain Rose is indicating is there are bacterial contaminations, and about 3 years ago is when we started provisions under regulation for warm water handling of oysters. The reason was that Virginia has had a couple of cases of what's known as Vibrio vulnificus, which can result in deaths and has. And once you get to a situation where you get beyond that, you have to take some precautions. So in the case of Virginia, once it had its second case of Vibrio vulnificus, we enacted warm water provisions where you either have to ice the product or have some type of refrigeration. It's really very variable as to how much time it can take, but the risk is always there. And the main risk with this whole process has been that it could result in Virginia having a very severe penalty handed down through the FDA, down through the health department, to where we would have not the capacity to really handle oysters the way we do now. There would have to be post-harvest treatment, which is very expensive. So all of this makes these warm water regulations very timely to keep Virginia having a vibrant industry. And I think that's the reason why when you look at the 28.2.232, the tables that you have in your books, you'll see that with oysters, it's pretty serious that most of these warm water violations especially have been recommended not only by law enforcement, but also by the industry to carry a suspension of 1 year. So that's the background there.
What kind of notice, other than the statutory notices that go out for the law, do these watermen get to kind of get them on speed with what you just told us and why they should do stuff like that?
Well, certainly since we started the warm water regulations, there's been input throughout the industry. They know what they have to conform to. Law enforcement does a good job in all the areas in educating. Since this has been a multi-year process, it's had one change since the beginning. In the very beginning, the icing was very limited. There's been changes as to how the icing has to occur. There are curfew times, which Dr. Wesson went over last month, I believe, as to when in the summertime, all the way from May up to September, when you have to have those oysters in. It's very well known. The other thing that's going on, you may recall from last month, there will be a mandatory education process for all of industry going through 2015. If you do not take part in the training, which is about a 45-minute training film, where you can't just skip to the end, it's designed so that it will have you go through the whole process. That will be the further education. And that's a requirement that's also being held placed on us by the ISSC, which is the Interstate Shellfish Commission.
Okay, I got a couple of questions. I noticed on page one, he has Mr. Harding has a number of licenses. What is the rationale to, and I understand the recommendation here says to revoke all of his licenses. What is the rationale behind that?
That's 28.2.232, and the fact that if you look at the tables that you have, and I might be able to bring that up right here, any failure to follow warm water restrictions results in a, if it's a conviction, which it was, it ends in a one-year suspension for the first commission appearance. So again, these guidelines were established in August of 2013, and since this violation occurred after then, it falls into the one-year suspension. As staff has indicated earlier, these are guidelines. There may be some cases where the commission would like to modify those guidelines. There certainly have been other cases on the warm water violations previously, which the commission has established the warrants.
Yeah, I got one question for the officer. What did Mr. Harding say? Did he, first of all, did he know that he had to have a refrigerated unit?
Yes, sir, he did. Other than being cooperative, that's all I know. I wasn't there on scene. I wasn't present at the time of the violation.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Erskine. I have a question, too. For the officer, and maybe since you weren't on scene, you might not be able to answer this, but it says that Officers Johnson and Franklin arrived at the Marine Railway and Mr. Harding was offloading 30 bags of oysters. Did he explain by chance what the intended use of those oysters were? Were they going to market? Were they being loaded onto another vessel because it was at the railway? Or
I don't recall. I don't have that in my notes, so I cannot answer that.
Okay.
Any other questions from the commission? Is Mr. Harding present?
Yes, sir.
Please come forward, sir.
Commissioner.
Oh, yes, Mr. Bell.
Do we know what time the oysters were harvested? How long they'd been out of the water for?
No, sir. That was might have been stated to the officers that were on scene that issued the summons. But
Mr. Harding, please come forward. I need to swear you in here. Please raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Please step in front of the microphone and state your name for the record.
My name is Darwin Randy Harding.
Mr. Harding, do you have anything you wish to tell the commission here, any explanation for what transpired that day?
That day was a day much like today. It was a cloudy, cool day like today is. Coldest day I think we had in May. Mr. Cockrell asked me if I would get him 4,000 oysters, and I said yes. He said, I'm going to put them overboard. So I got him 4,000 oysters. I said, how do you want them? He said, put part of them in, put 20 of them in 100-count bags, and put the other remainder in 200-count bags. So that's what I did. And I carried them down there to him, knowing that they were going overboard and not going to human consumption, that they were going overboard the same as what seed would be doing, was going back overboard. That was the reason I did not ice those oysters, because I figured that would put them in shock over my past experience from handling seafood, that by putting ice on them would chill them too far and would probably kill them if we put them back overboard. So that's where the oysters were going, and that was my understanding, that they were going back overboard.
Questions from the commission. Mr. Zeter.
Do you know that if, I don't know, I'm going to ask you a question, I don't know, if the oysters did get contaminated from bacteria because of the heat, if even if you put them overboard, would they cure themselves or would they stay contaminated?
I'm not sure about that. Maybe this gentleman here could inform us, you know, like when you put seed over, I mean, seed would have, to me, would have the same problem with seed, whether regardless of the size of the oyster. It seemed like we would be running into the same problem. I don't know that for sure, but, you know, if you're buying seed somewhere and putting it overboard and putting it in a cage, how long does it take to go out? I don't know.
Mr. Erskine.
Can tell us.
I think I might be able to address that, but these are naturally occurring bacteria, so they're in the water, and these oysters will, in fact, purge those bacteria to a certain extent. But they're always filtering them as they do filter with the water. To answer your question previously about the spoilage rate, I guess you'd call it, they don't necessarily become spoiled. They become more heavily infected. And when you pull oysters out of the water, there is a timetable for doubling of that bacteria. And at 80 degrees Fahrenheit, roughly, in air temperature, it would take 1 hour to double the concentration of that Vibrio in that oyster. So if I can, Mr. Commissioner, I have a follow-up question for Mr. Harding, are you aware of these summer harvest regulations and restrictions?
For selling the product to the consumer?
Well, in particular, the one that you were charged with for transporting oysters after curfew time without a temperature control device.
I didn't know that it was that you couldn't sell the oyster, knowing that it wasn't going to market, that it was going back overboard. In other words, same as seed. You know, when you buy a seed, it's going back overboard.
But you understand the jeopardy that you put yourself in as an industry member, as well as the industry itself, as Mr. O'Reilly explained?
I do now. I didn't not before, you know. I didn't know that there was that much of a problem with it, because it wasn't being sold on the market. It was being put back overboard.
Mr. Erskine.
One more follow-up. Is this your first public health violation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a follow-up.
Mr. Zeter.
What, if you don't mind answering my question, you don't have to, but what does this mean in terms, you know, I raised an issue here that you have a lot of licenses, okay, for
yes.
A lot of different things. What does that mean to you financially per month if the commission follows the recommendation and takes your license for 12 months? How much are you losing per month?
Depending on the months of the year. Depending on the way things are, you know, I have some disabilities. I can't take a whole lot of thrashing around. I can only work the calmer days, not the rougher days, if I work. So that's questionable, you know, what you're asking me. If you took those, I probably would have to get on disability. So I'm kind of at the court's mercy today.
Mr. Harding, I have a question as well. I believe you testified that these oysters were loaded in three different bags. Two different bags?
Oh, well, there were 30 bags in all, 20 bags of 100 count, 10 bags of 200 count, 4,000 oysters.
That's pretty precise counts. Why were they in bags if you were just going to place them overboard?
I had to have some means of carrying them, and he asked for them to be put in bags. They were not washed. They were not washed oysters. They were not going to the consumption. They were going back overboard.
I guess I don't understand why they were bagged at all if they were supposedly just going overboard.
I don't know. He just asked for them to be in bags, and he was going to put them overboard to raise the salt content, I guess. I don't know. You'd have to ask Mr. Cockrell what he was going to do with them.
Mr. Ballard.
Was the delivery location, was that to a dock or is by the railway? Is this also a seafood dealer's location?
He asked me to back up beside the bulkhead where he had a boat that was full of lumber, but he was going to use that boat to do whatever he was going to do with them. Half of the oysters was on the dock by the boat. The remainder was in the truck when the officer pulled up.
But this is his place of business?
Yeah, they own the railway. And
okay.
And that's where he does his aquaculture and everything from that area.
And that's where he ships oysters out of, to the best of your knowledge?
Yeah, usually I guess I'd sold some to him for the market, and those would go directly into the back of his truck.
Okay.
Any other questions from the commission? Yes, please, Captain Rose.
And then this, excuse me. It's my understanding from both officers that these oysters were marketable size from 2.5 inches and larger.
Chief O'Reilly, do you have something to add?
Yes. Just a little background, a couple things I would like to comment on. These regulations do go back, and I certainly recall one of the first incidences for warm water violations where the officers certainly have to react without knowing what an individual's intention is. The problem is the officers can't cover all the areas at one time. And so, you know, the idea that where the intention was, where these oysters were going, is something that the commission should consider, that the officer can't know that. The officer is operating under the regulation. And clearly the regulation has traction. It has been well known, and I think that has to be taken into account. And the staff recommendation that you'll find with all these cases today, you have a sheet of blue paper, second page back in your evaluation for Mr. Harding, and it starts out by indicating what you just heard from Captain Rose was where the violation took place, and also that it is looked at upon the guidelines that were established August 27, 2013. And according to those guidelines, one conviction of the failure to follow warm water restrictions within a 12-month period mandates a one-year revocation of all fisheries licenses. And then in keeping with the rest of the recommendation, in accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission revoke Mr. Harding's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters and revoke all Mr. Harding's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 1 year from the date of the commission meeting, September 23rd, 2014, ending on September 22nd, 2015, would mark the one-year period.
Mr. Zita.
Under 282.232, it cites three different criteria for suspension of license. Now, do I understand that the staff's recommendation is based partly on the consideration for revocation based that this was a health risk? Is that correct?
That is correct. The information you heard both from Mr. Erskine and from staff in relation to Vibrio, vulnificus, and also the condition of the industry itself is very fragile and has been, and that's why these warm water regulations are so important to the Commonwealth. And up on the screen I have the particular part of the tables that you have in your packet that indicates the one-year suspension of licenses and privileges.
Okay, and also, would it be the staff's consideration for the recommendation, the severity of any damage that might have occurred in reference to the public health?
Yes, and I think I would also reiterate that one of our problems with these situations with warm water violations
We don't know the intention. So we don't know the intention of the person. We can only go by the regulations. And certainly, if these oysters were or were not intended for market conditions, for marketing, you really don't know that. You can't go by that. And that's how the officer reacted.
Let me follow up on the commissioner's questions here. The way that they were bagged, 100 count to a bag, isn't that normal for resale to the public?
I think you would probably want to ask one of your colleagues towards the end of the table as the implications of the bagging. Mr. Erskine may have a better understanding of that, or Mr. Ballard.
Okay.
We don't bag our oysters in particularly, but we would put them in a box that would go into a refrigeration, a bag maybe intended for, I guess, overboard storage or could be for direct sale, but we in particular do not bag our oysters. We do count our oysters out in 100 or 200 count, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Erskine. Ms. Haney, excuse me, tired.
Can I ask Mr. Harding a question? You said on other occasions you'd unload directly into the buyer's truck.
Yes, ma'am.
How would the oysters be packaged when you did that?
The same way. They were packaged the same way. But the man, when I sold the oysters, he wanted 4,000. He asked that I put them in 100-count bags, 2,000 of them, and the others in 200-count bags. Well, I did. The oysters were not washed. They were not ready for market.
Any other questions from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
I don't know if Mr. Ballard had an answer to his question, but it was about this was 4:45 in the afternoon that the officers observed you. When did the oysters come out of the water that day?
Earlier that day.
Like what time?
By 11 o'clock.
So where were the oysters from 11 a.m. to 4:45?
In the shade.
In the truck?
In the shade, yes.
Okay.
It was a day like today, about 60 degrees.
Well, the matter's before the commission.
I move we approve the staff's recommendation.
Motion by Mr. Zedron to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
Second by Mr. Ballard. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any noes? Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Your license is suspended for a year, Mr. Harding. Captain Ballard.
Yes, sir. Commissioner, members of the commission, this is a case, a home order forced restriction case involving Mr. Charles A.D. Marino, registered commercial fisherman. On May the 5th, 2014, Marine Police Officer Andy Dunton observed Mr. Charles D. Marino coming into Oyster Harbor by boat. Upon further investigation, it was determined that Mr. D. Marino had unshaded oysters in his possession. Mr. DeMarino had an orange basket with 100 oysters inside without any type of shading, which is a violation. Code 28.2201, Regulation 4, VAC 20-1230-30-C, shading required on shellfish. Mr. Dunton determined there wasn't any type of shading on the vessel. MPO Dunton advised Mr. DeMarino he was going to seize the oysters and dispose of them in a condemned area in Oyster Harbor. And issue him a summons for the violation. MPO Dunton and Mr. DeMarino disposed of the oysters in the Oyster Harbor condemned area. Mr. DeMarino actually took them out of his boat and placed them in the condemned area himself. He was issued a summons on May the 5th to appear in Northampton County General District Court for no shade on shellfish. On June 24th, Northampton County General District Court, he was fined $75 in court costs of $121. He appealed the conviction to Northampton County Circuit Court. On September the 8th, 2014, he failed to appear in Circuit Court and was found guilty in his absence. fine was raised to $100 plus court costs.
Any questions for Captain Ballard?
I need to recuse myself.
Okay, thank you. Let the record reflect a quorum remains, although Mr. Ballard is recusing himself in this case. Chief O'Reilly.
Would the commissioner like me to present the further information for fisheries at this time?
Yes, please.
So this is a situation where this was on the screen previously. It shows the licenses and permits for Mr. DeMarino. It also shows here the previous convictions for clamming and oystering back in 2012, not having an oyster aquaculture license, which has been required since 2007. That's when the oyster aquaculture license was established. And this new conviction, a warm water violation, no shade on shellfish. This is in your tables that you have in terms of the sanctions for violations of the natural resources related to 282-232. The recommendation is a one-year suspension for the first appearance. The situations are very similar. We do have a May situation here. There is a curfew in place for May, and there is also shading required. And staff certainly recalls 3 years ago that I think one of the first citations issued was on the Eastern Shore for lack of shading. And staff was involved with that at one point, and the indication from the person who received the citation was that he intended to, you know, take the oysters and put them in a different place, and they weren't going to market. It's very similar to what you just heard previously, that there is no way that law enforcement can know what the intentions are. And imagine that if they try and make that situation, they can't. So this is a very similar situation for the warm water, a human health situation or public health situation. It follows along the same routine as you saw for the lack of icing, both warm water violations. And in accordance with Section 282-232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the Commission revoke Mr. DeMarino's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters and revoke all Mr. DeMarino's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 1 year from the date of this Commission meeting, September 23rd, 2014, and that will end that suspension on September 22nd, 2015.
Chief O'Reilly, will you speak a bit more here, although it's repetitive, to have it on the record here in this particular case here is the impact from both biological and for an industry-wide standard than from a human health standard?
From a human health standard, it would not take many more cases of having Vibrio vulnificus where our industry could change radically. It could change to a post-harvest treatment process, which very few operations could afford to do that, to say the least. The other part is on the biological end, I think that, you know, you do have what Mr. Erskine had indicated earlier. You have the multiplication factor. It's also unusual about the shellfish in that my understanding is you can have a clump of oysters and they can vary quite a bit from one oyster to the other as far as what the density of the bacteria is. So during the warm months, that's why it's critical to have shading, to have icing if necessary, to have temperature controlled if necessary. Otherwise, the risk is, and the risk to human health, there have been mortalities, and that's, that's a bad situation for those who are immunocompromised, which usually are the ones that have the problems and mortality.
Other questions from the commission? Is Mr. DeMarino present? Please come forward, sir. I need to swear you in here, raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name for the record.
Charles Anthony DeMarino.
Mr. DeMarino here, is there anything you wish to tell the commission here on this event?
Yes. On May the 5th, I went honking in the morning, just at daylight. I came in about approximately 10 minutes. I had 8 bushels of conks in there.
Could you move over to the microphone?
Yes, ma'am. And on my way home, I wanted to get some oysters to eat, so I went and caught approximately 100 oysters from my cultured oysters, just 100. I put them in the bottom of a basket, and they filled them up about maybe 4 inches in the bottom of the basket. I took another basket, put inside of it, I had socks, bottles of water, and my gloves in there. And that's how I had them, transported them home. Mr. Dunton came down 2 feet from my boat on the side of the boat, sit there and talk to me, watched me prepare to unload. He's checked my license numerous times, so he didn't bother to check my license. And as I started to unload, he was getting ready to walk up to the dock, and he asked me if I had anything else in the boat, any other seafood. I said, yes, I got these oysters. I got them to take home. I'm not required to fill out a tag, but I did, just in case. And I filled the tag out, showed it to him, and I took the basket out. As I'm preparing to unload, I'm throwing everything up on the dock. And he said, you didn't cover those oysters? I said, I had a basket the size of a basket. He was 3 feet away from it, and he didn't see it. But I took it, I put it up on the bow, and he said, don't unload them yet. And he went to his truck, made a call, and I said, what do you want me to do with them? He said, I'm not even sure you can keep them yet. And he comes back from the truck, and he says, Charlie, give me your license. So I gave him my aquaculture harvest license, and he said, I don't want that. I want your commercial license. So I gave him my commercial card. And he said, you need to dump them out or I will. And I said, Andy, he's a friend of mine, but I said, Mr. Dunton, they were covered all the way in until I got here to unload. And he said, they're not loaded now. And at that point, I ceased all conversation. No sense in arguing. I walked over to the edge of the bank, and he said, that's good, and I dumped him out. He wrote me a ticket, and that's that. It was 10:30 in the morning. They were well shaded, well covered. They were not even, I mean, if I had a tarp across the whole top of the boat, they'd have been more shaded in them baskets than they would, because the sun was just coming up at 10:30 in the morning. And they were for my own personal consumption. They weren't for sale. They weren't going anywhere. I took them, and I was putting them on a truck. And Mr. Dunton would know that whenever I sell them in the oyster, I come in, I go to RNC Seafood. They're all bagged up in the account that I'm going to put them in there, and they go for sale. These were not for sale. They were for me to take home to eat. And that's it. At that point, I unloaded my conks, and out the road I went.
Questions from the commission? Mr. Seastrom.
You were given a citation, and you appeared in district court, did you?
I did not appear. That's my own fault.
I hope I don't get you confused with the last one. Did you appeal that conviction?
I appealed it, and I did not make the court date. I showed up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because that's when I thought court started, but not the circuit court. The circuit court had 9:30 in the morning, and I showed up at the other one, and I was convicted. My fault. Nobody blamed it myself.
Is this your first conviction? Or?
Yes, sir. This was on the 5th. The time limit just went in on the oysters on May the 1st. And honestly, I didn't even realize because I hadn't been, I've been conking for 2 months, not oystering at all. And I just decided to bring some home to eat. So I stopped, picked them up. Had I known that, I couldn't have covered them up anymore, but I would have, because there was a time limit, too. You're supposed to have them in by 10 o'clock. No, maybe it was 12.
11.
11, 11. Okay. It may be 10, actually, I think.
Okay. Mr. Erskine.
Mr. DiMarino.
Yes, sir.
Do you have shading on your vessel?
I have a tarp on there now. I had two of them underneath the bow.
At the time, did you have shade?
Nothing. I didn't have a tarp on the boat. We're not required to have them for conks. And I don't, I hadn't even planned on picking up the oysters. I just thought I'd catch some and take them to eat.
So you don't.
They were well covered up.
I mean, but you don't harvest oysters then during the summer months on that vessel?
I do, but if I do, I hadn't been in probably 2 months. I've been doing nothing but, I guess I didn't do any in April. I had all conking. The shading was only 4 days before then, before it was implemented. You know, it's not, we don't have to do it until May 1st. And May 5th is when I got the, so I didn't do any oystering in that time to put in any shading or even think about it.
Mr. Commissioner.
Mr. Erskine.
As a follow-up, how many years have you been growing cultured oysters?
Quite a few years.
So you're familiar with May 1st on your vessel, you're supposed to have shading?
Well, I do oysters commercially, and as far as the shade goes, yes. I know that I'm supposed to have the shade when the time is, whenever I harvest. But it was just 4 days before, and like I said, they were shaded.
Are you saying you didn't need to and you didn't bother to get rigged up for oystering and put the tarp up?
I wasn't oystering. I was conking. So I hadn't been oystering in a month or so, or two. It wasn't what I was doing. I wasn't making any money doing that. I was just conking. So I don't, you know, if I would have went 5 days before, I don't have to have a tarp. I don't have to do any shading on the oysters at all. It just was implemented on March the 1st and March 5th. And May 5th is when I had the oysters. And they were to take home. And if there was any Vibrio, it was going to be me that got it. But.
Well, the impact of the industry, even if it was you, could have been very significant.
Yes, sir. If I got sick from the oysters, absolutely.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. DiMarino. Here. Chief O'Reilly, will you go back over the recommendation again, please?
Yes. I'd also like to indicate that in your packet you have the Chapter 1230, and Captain Ballard, as he indicated, on 4 BAC 2012-30-30C, says from May 1 through September 30th, any vessel used for the harvest of shellfish from either public or private grounds shall provide shading over the area that serves as storage for the shellfish when the shellfish are on board the vessel. So it doesn't distinguish as to what those oysters are doing, what the intention of anyone is doing. It simply says if you are taking oysters out of the water, you have the warm water provisions. So the staff recommendation is in accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia. Staff recommends the commission revoke Mr. DiMarino's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters and revoke Mr. DiMarino's licenses to take or catch fish, shellfish, or marine organisms for a period of 1 year from the date of this commission meeting, September 23rd, 2014, and that will end on September 22nd, 2015, the suspension.
I have a couple questions.
Mr. Zedra.
If, let's go with his scenario. If he had another basket with materials in a basket that covered, wouldn't let the sun through, so to speak, would that be within the code for covering those oysters?
It'd be in the regulation that you have to have adequate shading, and, you know, so most folks are using tarps, but I think in the case of Mr. DiMarino, he said he was conking and did not consider having those 100 oysters as really anything more than he was going to take in for personal consumption. But the regulation states that if you harvest, period, you have to provide that shading, adequate shading.
Okay, and the question is I'm getting to what shade's required, is if he covers the oysters with another basket with clothes in it so that, this, you know, that shade, is that within what is required within the regulations, number one? And then number two, when you get to the dock, are you permitted to take that shade off to get them out of the boat, or do you have to kind of leave them shaded and then, I guess, put them in your truck or whatever you're going to do with them?
I think the first question, Captain Ballard may want to address what the officers would consider to be shading, and it sounded, or at least the information I heard from the testimony from Mr. DiMarino, was that Officer Dutton could not determine that there was shading at the time that he looked. But Captain Ballard may be able to tell more from
Officer
law enforcement.
Dutton looked, and he did have baskets. He had been catching Nobby well at the time. He had several baskets on board his vessel. Officer Dutton observed the oysters in the basket, uncovered.
Okay.
There was no tarp on the vessel for cover. The regulation specifies that it shall be a cover or a tarp to stop the direct rays of the sun. A basket, I mean, another basket on top that's got holes in the bottom of the orange totes. I mean, it's not a complete cover.
Ask him. You got to ask the commissioner.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
When these oysters or any of the shellfish are on a boat, as I said, I could put a tarp over top of my boat that's 5.5 feet tall, from 20 feet long and 8 feet wide. There's going to be more sun on those than inside my baskets, because the sun is right over here. It wasn't direct down. And two, these are orange fish baskets. And these fish baskets, there's not much light that can get in there. And with the other one inside of it, I mean, it's pretty dark. And no sun would have got to it. When I started unloading, that is when I took the basket out of the basket and set it up there, and I showed Officer Dutton this is what I had. And at that point, he wrote me the ticket. I mean, he did what he had to do.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, because I hear that the officer's testimony was that the officer did not see the oysters covered up with the basket. Is that true or not true?
He couldn't see them because they were sitting right next to him, but he couldn't see them. And it wasn't until I started unloading, and he asked me what was in, if I had any more. And I said, yes, I got oysters back here.
At that time, were the oysters covered?
Yes, sir. They were covered at that time. But I started taking everything out of the boat and stacking them up on the dock. And I took the oysters when I had them, and he asked me about it. I put them on the bow, right up so he could see them. And they were out.
No further questions.
Mr. Erskine.
Sir, you testified that you were catching conchs that day?
Yes, sir.
And when did you harvest these 100 oysters?
I harvested them about 15 minutes before I got to the dock. It was the last thing I did on the way home. I stopped at my grounds, and I went over to my, where I have my aquaculture oysters. I have cage and spat bags. I just went over there and dumped some out. Took what I thought was approximately 100 oysters or so, enough for me and the kids, and put them in a basket. Threw another one in there and carted them home.
Okay.
I had no intentions of selling them, no intentions of, I mean, there were other people unloading stuff right up the dock, you know, in a bag. We do it every day. The guys take an onion sack and fill them with the oysters, and they bring them in, and that's how we unload them, is just like that. That's when they're for sale. Buy them in a basket because they weren't for sale.
Any other questions from the commission? I guess I'll note one thing, Mr. DeMarino. We write regulations specificity, a requirement that is required of everybody. It's so that we don't get in a situation here on what one person's judgment is versus another. You might have thought that these oysters were properly shaded, but we can't be in a position here with people basically making up as they go along. Seems good enough to me. It should cover it. Not a problem. I don't think that we're working like that. And we can't be in a position here where people just can't have a pile of dirty clothes on the boat, and whenever an officer pulls up, you throw them on top of the oyster, you say, voila, they're covered. So the matter is before the commission.
Can I ask a question, I guess?
Yeah.
Couple things. This is a warrant, and it's part of this package, and of course it indicates up at the top on the left is Trident's absence, which I think this kind of comes down maybe to a credibility issue, just like a criminal hearing before court. That's why I asked him about the two hearings, because the test in criminal court is beyond a reasonable doubt. The judge has to find beyond a reasonable doubt that he's guilty, and of course he has an opportunity, if he desires, to put on a defense. And in this particular case, which is odd, because I understand he didn't show up for the district court hearing, was found guilty there, but then to appeal it, because if you were satisfied with the first hearing, it's over with. But to appeal it and then go to the next level circuit court, and he shows up late, and he's convicted in his absence again, tells me that there was no trier of fact listening. And I've done this for 18 years, okay? And so if this came before me as a judge, I swear in the officer, and I said, did the facts occur as indicated on the warrant? He'd say yes. And I found the guy guilty and imposed a fine, and that would be it. So it tells me that there was no trier of fact that listened to the officer who was at the scene. So it comes down to whether it's a credibility issue here with this guy here, this waterman, is to whether his testimony is before us under oath that he covered the oysters. And I understand... I'm a waterman myself, and I understand the fact that you got this tarp over there, and yet, because what we're looking for is public safety, is that the sun can come in under that and do more harm than if you covered them with another basket that didn't allow the sun in. So what I'm saying here is that I don't think this is a black and white cut situation, because of the underlying convictions were not heard based on all the evidence before the court. And so that turns this into a different little hearing here, in as much as, in as far as my view is anyway, is that it's got to be the credibility of this waterman testifying under oath. I understand I believe he said that he doesn't have any prior convictions. The other thing about the officer, if the oysters were uncovered when the officer looked in the boat and saw the other shellfish he had there, he would have seen them. But my understanding of the testimony is that he asked this waterman, do you have anything else on the boat? And so if it was in plain view with nothing on top, he could have seen those oysters. He wouldn't have to ask this waterman, did you have anything else on the boat? And, of course, this waterman responded right away, yeah, I got these oysters over here. And so I think that's the issue that we have before us.
Okay. Further discussion?
He has had other convictions.
That's for new.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, well.
He has had one more conviction. That's what was...
Yeah. So, I mean, he's, you know, there's an oyster conviction in 2009, another something in 2012. And, you know, it's not as long a list as some of, you know, there have been a...
It's been about a warm board. But I deny any of that.
And he's another something was going to be out for 2012.
Yeah, I got an order for peg.
Further discussion. Well, the matter's before the commission.
I'm always looking down at that end for these shellfish things.
I'm sorry, Mr.
I'm always looking down at our shellfish guys for these shellfish things.
Well, then I'll back up.
And we only got one shellfish guy because one of them reclused himself. So.
Mr. Erskine.
Well, you understand the severity of the situation of not shading product, and that's a public health risk, and you know, it can certainly shut down your industry and the rest of the shellfish industry. And as Mr. O'Reilly indicated, you know, that could be post-harvest process, or worse yet, it could actually be that FDA shuts our grounds down to summer harvest period, and that would be from May 1st until October 1st, which means you'd have no industry. I understand the testimony is, you know, you had 100 oysters for personal consumption, and if you get sick versus selling a million oysters, it's inconsequential. It's the same consequence to the industry. In light of this, I understand it's your first conviction, and you know, you had oysters with what you claim is shading, and I understand it's supposed to be, by definition, intercept the direct sun rays, and you were cooperative with the officers. I'd make a motion of a six-month revocation of all fishing privileges.
I'd second that.
All right, there's a motion and a second for a revocation period of 6 months for both commercial licenses and tidal fishing privileges.
From the date of this commission meeting, September 23rd, 2014.
Okay, and there's a second by Mr. Zetron here. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any no's? Chair votes aye as well. Mr. DiMarino, your licenses and your tidal fishing privileges are revoked for 6 months. If you go with the officers, they will explain to you, give you a letter here that will explain your appeal rights.
Yes, sir. This is a repeat offender case involving Mr. Brooksdale Pruitt from Hancock, Virginia. The first offense occurred, this is for three convictions within a 12-month period. The first offense occurred October the 21st at approximately 11:15 hours in Accomack County. MPO Drummond had the occasion to measure crabs belonging to Brooks D. Pruitt, licensed commercial crabbers, returned to the Watch Brigtown Marina. MPO Dunton culled one U.S. standard bushel basket of Mr. Pruitt's hard crabs and found 20-plus undersized male blue hard crabs measuring less than 5 inches from tip to tip of their longest spikes. It is unlawful for any person to catch, take, or have in possession more than 10 male blue hard crabs per U.S. standard bushel measuring less than 5 inches from tip to tip to the longest spike. A summons was issued to Mr. Pruitt for possession of unculled crabs. He said he was only saving a mess of crabs for a friend. Very cooperative and polite during the boarding. Issued a summons on October the 21st, was found guilty November the 13th in Accomack County Court, $100 fine and $116 court cost. Number two, on February the 3rd, 2014, while on routine inspection of a commercial harvesting vessel at Jordan Marina in Gloucester County, MPO Cagle and Ritchie observed a commercial fishing vessel, Christy Renee, pulling to Jordan Marina to unload oysters. The vessel was loaded with orange-colored baskets with oysters. An inspection of the harvested oysters using an approved metallic tub, 4-quart measuring can, and 3-inch culling stick revealed 16 quarts of unculled oysters. The violation consisted mainly of undersized oysters with very little shell. Mr. Pruitt was provided the option of posting a cash bond on the oysters remaining. Mr. Pruitt declined, stating the violations would be found in all baskets, 24 of them. MPO Cagle issued Mr. Brooks Pruitt and Mr. Thomas Pruitt a uniform summons. Mr. Ritchie issued a Mr. John Lewis a summons for the same violation. Mr. Pruitt was very polite, cooperative during the entire encounter. Summons was issued February the 3rd, 2014. It was heard in Gloucester County General District Court on March the 12th of 2014, and he was fined $100 court cost, and court cost of $81, I'm sorry. Number three, this offense occurred June the 17th, 2014, at approximately 8:15 hours in Accomack County. MPO Drummond was on patrol in Punxsutawney Creek near Finney's Island. MPO Drummond saw a crab scraper known to him as Brooks Pruitt. Mr. Pruitt was actively pulling a crab scrape when MPO Drummond approached. As MPO Drummond checked Mr. Pruitt, he noticed one full U.S. standard bushel basket of female and male hard crabs. There was also a second U.S. standard bushel, approximately one-fourth full of male and hard crabs. Both baskets of hard crabs contained numerous undersized male blue hard crabs for which Mr. Pruitt was warned. Law states it's illegal to possess hard crabs while having a crab scrape on board the boat. Mr. Pruitt was issued a summons for possession of hard crabs on a scrape boat. While signing a summons, Mr. Pruitt stated that the BMRC was going to put the waterman out of business and that MPO Drummond was one of the reasons the state and the county had no money. All crabs were returned to the water. He was very cooperative. He was issued a summons on June 17th, 2014 for possession of hard crabs on a scrape boat, 282706. On July 9th, 2014, in Accomack County General District Court, he was found guilty and fined $75 and court costs of $86.
Thank you, Captain Beck.
Yes, sir.
Chief O'Reilly.
So you've had for the last several minutes Mr. Pruitt's licenses for 2014, a listing of previous convictions, which are a variety of situations, and the new convictions that Captain Ballard just went over, possession of uncold crabs, having possession of uncold oysters, and possession of hard crabs on a scrape boat. And to speak about the blue crab, I think the commission is very aware that after 2011, the crab resource has not fared very well. The recruitment has not been more than below average. The industry has had its worst years as far as harvest. Overall, the economics, because there's been low supply of crabs, have been fairly good for some. But the idea is, when you have a harvest in 2013 that's less than 20 million pounds, that's a pretty, you're hitting a low point, at 18 plus million pounds. So certainly from a resource aspect, any kind of diminution of the resource is not a positive thing in any case at all. These offenses are going to fall into what staff had gone over earlier, meaning that your tables that you have, table 4 through 7, which are based on 282-232, they're not all-encompassing at this point. Please understand that it's only been about a year, a little over a year, that we had the guidelines in place for the commission, and we will have to at some time very soon supplement some of the categories and receive the blessings of the commission that they should fall into those guidelines. So there's going to be cases, and this is one of them, where it's not clear exactly how this fits into the guidelines, but it definitely fits into the situation that we had in 1996 where you have 3 feet fences. The staff recommendation is in accordance with Section 282-232 of the Code of Virginia. Staff recommends the commission place Mr. Pruitt on probation for a period of 1 year from September 23, 2014 until September 22, 2015. Any failure on Mr. Pruitt's part to obey any of the laws or regulations relating to the marine resource of the Commonwealth during the 1 year probation would result in Mr. Pruitt appearing before the commission for a hearing under license revocation under Section 282-232.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions to staff? Mr. Zedrin.
I'm looking at the record here for Mr. Pruitt, and let me see if I understand it correctly. The Crab statute is 28.2708, as I understand it. And my copy of the record says that on in 1993, he had a finding of guilty under 18.2708. In July of 95, he's got a guilty of 28.2708. That would be two. That on June of 2003, he has another violation of 28.2708 dealing with the crabs, which would be three. Then under May of 2005, he's got another violation of 28.2708. That one was dismissed. And then September of 2013, there was another violation, but that was dismissed. But then in October 2013, it was a guilty of that same statute. So that would be at least four convictions of the same statute, which tells me that he had notice about what the statute was about, because it all deals with unculled crabs.
Yes.
Why? What is the basis then for the just probationary period for Mr. Pruitt?
This isn't the first time that the recommendations from staff are merely to let the commission know that according to what we have from before, which was the 1996 three-peat, that this falls into a probationary situation. The commission can, just like it can for the tables that you have, tables 4 through 7, can treat that as a guideline. And the commission certainly at any time has the ability to modify the staff recommendation. And this won't be the first one probably that, you know, today, where staff feels that it has to go by the available information it has on these recommendations and then bring that to the commission.
Any other questions to staff? Ms. Brooks Pruitt available in the room? Please come forward, sir. Ms. Pruitt, I need to swear you in here. Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record and speak into the microphone.
Brooks Pruitt.
Ms. Pruitt, is there anything you wish to explain to the commission?
On the last offense, I was crab scraping and I hadn't done it, and I don't know how many years it's been now. And it was my friend told me that it was you could catch some crabs and make a day's work. And the man said, we were having problems with crab pot and different things, you know, making a day's work. I have a unknown medicine in the whole mess that comes out, and I think I don't know what I'd do if something happened to the license. And when the officer come aboard and seen the crabs and all, I always throw them in. Years and years ago, and that is, I don't know how many years I've, you know, done this scraping. And so I says, he says, you're not supposed to save them. I says, well, I certainly got them, and I did not know it for sure, for certain. And I'm guilty. That's the only plea I got.
Questions from the commission? Mr. Zedrin.
You heard me go over your record with staff, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you say you did not know it. In August of 1993, you had a conviction for that same offense, okay, in 93. Then in...
I don't remember it, sir.
Then in 1995, you have a conviction, and it even lists on here second offense for the same thing. June of 2003, you have another conviction for the same thing. In May of 2005, the charge was possession of uncalled crab 50 plus one bushel. Then that one was dismissed. But we're talking about the issue of notice here. You said you didn't know what the statute was?
That was crab pot and crab scraping I was talking about. Why I said that. I was crab scraping when I got this last ticket. And I hadn't done that in maybe 12 so year or more. And I didn't know the law had changed that you couldn't save hard crabs while you crab scrape. And, you know, peeler potters, they save them and everything. So, I didn't question nothing. I didn't ask them why not. It was overnight change job from crab potting to crab scraping to go make a day's work for my family. And that's...
I have no further questions.
Any other questions from the commission? Any other questions for our Captain Ballard or for Chief O'Reilly? Ms. Ballard.
For Chief O'Reilly, probably. With regard to the culling of crabs and the size limits, is there a difference on crab potting versus crab scraping?
No, the culling's in a separate regulation, which is in your packet, so it's the same.
Yep. Okay.
Well, I'll just note that the three offenses that bring us here to this date span an 8-month period, and they're all kind of similar in one regard. It's undersized oysters, it's uncalled crabs, it's hence crabs with a hand scrape on a boat here. It seems to be a long history, Mr. Pruitt, here of being lackadaisical about the regulations. Mr. Erskine.
I agree with the commissioner. It seems like there's three pages of rather noteworthy violations, most of which are undersized species, whether it's whelks or crabs or oysters. Or just seems like there might be a continual oversight on your pattern, about the size regulations. And I also find that staff recommendation of probation for a period of 1 year seems inconsistent, maybe.
Inadequate?
Or that might be more appropriate. My motion would be a probation period of 2 years from the date of this commission meeting, September 23rd, 2014.
Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
All right. The motion for 2-year probation. Is there a second? Or do you wish to discuss the motion?
I'd like to discuss it.
All right, Mr. Cedron, let's discuss the motion.
I hear you. I don't think that probation is will get the message across to this individual because of so many repeat violations. If you had not made that motion, of course, it hadn't been seconded, I'd have made a motion to revoke his license for 6 months, send him the message, and then put him on probation for a year. These violations go back years, and they're getting worse. I'm not much of a crabber. I mean, I crab, but I can look at a crab without a measure and tell you whether it's too big or too small. And here's an experienced waterman that does this for a living. And I'm sure it's just like when you go to the seafood market, you say you want a pound and a half of shrimp. It amazes me that the guy reaches his hand in there and puts a pound and a half of shrimp on the scale. I mean, I'm amazed within a tenth of a pound. So I think that in looking at this record, and I want to be consistent with and not saying that everybody gets the same sentence. I want to be consistent, and we look at the facts and the record and the repeated times. The testimony is that he was not aware. You can't convince me of being convicted of that many offenses for the same offense and not be aware. And if it told you anything,
if you've got one of those tickets, you ought to find out that you ought to be aware before the next five or ten come up. And so I would like to see, if your motion doesn't get a second, then I will move that he be suspended for 6 months, his license, and then be put on probation for a year after that.
Mr. Hall makes a good point here. I believe Mr. Pruitt was testifying that he wasn't aware of having the hand scrape on the boat here when harvesting hard crabs. It wasn't that he was unaware of the culling requirements for crabs. Mr. Pruitt, let me ask you a question. Do you know why we have size limits?
Say again?
Do you know why we have size limits?
Size limits?
Yeah, do you know why we have size limits?
Regulate the harvest and stuff.
Well, we want the small crabs and the small oysters to grow so that they can reproduce another generation. And if we take them out of the water before they have a chance to reproduce, we ain't getting much of another generation. So when you take the babies, we ain't having the mamas. That's why we do it. Just thought I'd point that out. And as far as the what we're looking at here at the moment here, Ms. Erskine, with all due respect here, I have to agree with Mr. Zedron. I believe that it would be inadequate to resolve this matter before us here with just probationary period here. Mr. Pruitt has exhibited a long pattern of, I'll be generous and say, lackadaisical attitudes towards our harvest restrictions. Ms. Erskine.
Based on some of the discussion, I'll rescind my motion.
Mr. Zedron.
I move that we revoke his license for a period of 6 months from today's date and place him on probation for a period of a year thereafter.
Can I ask for a clarification? The probation, or excuse me, the revocation for 6 months, would that include the revocation of his tidal fishing privileges in addition to his licenses?
Yes, it would.
All right. So we have a motion on the table for a 6 month revocation of licenses and tidal fishing privileges, followed by a 1 year of probation?
Yes, sir.
That's the motion.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Neal. Do we have any discussion on that motion? Well, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Any noes? The chair votes aye. The motion passes unanimously. Mr. Pruitt, your license and your tidal fishing privileges are revoked for 6 months, followed by a year of probation. We need you to dot the I's and cross the T's and follow the regulations from here on in. We'll be seeing you again. Who would rather not? If you'll accompany the officer in the back of the room here, he will take you to give you your paperwork to explain your appeal right and how you were to do that. Is there another case of Christopher Nelson? Captain Green. Captain Green, were you sworn in earlier this morning?
No, sir.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Both you, Captain Green, and you, Mr. Nelson.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
On Captain Wednesday, Green. April 9th, 2014, Marine Police Officer, Marine MPO Henry Richley, received a complaint of an illegally set gill net on the Rappahannock River near the mouth of Mill Creek. The following day, on the morning of April 10th, 2014, Officer Richley, and accompanied with another officer, MPO Cagle, returned to the net at about 0700 hours, 0708 roughly, just a few minutes after 7 in the morning, and found Mr. Nelson harvesting fish from that net. The net did not have a flag or ball at either end, no reflective tape, no license was displayed, no, it wasn't marked as specified by regulation. 12 striped bass were located in a tender vessel mixed with other fish. Mr. Nelson stated that he had not culled the catch yet.
When an inspection was conducted on the vessel Christina, 22 striped bass remains were located in a cooler. Mr. Nelson stated that they were from the day before, and his first mate should have thrown them away. Mr. Nelson admitted to cleaning the fish and said the fillets were at his house to Officer Richley at the time. Mr. Nelson was charged with commercially fished striped bass without a permit, also for failed to properly display license tag, and improperly marked gill net, all set in Middlesex County General District Court, all with finding of guilt on their findings in Middlesex Court on May 19th, 2014.
Chief Arab.
What you have in front of you are the 2014 license and permits held by Mr. Nelson, previous convictions, fail to place oysters loose in a boat. That goes back to February of 2010, and also in possession of uncold oysters, and that goes back to 2009. The new convictions, which have just been outlined by Captain Green, altogether 34 striped bass, and it's a violation of Regulation 252, and the offense was April 10th, 2014. Captain Green also went over the fact that the gear was not properly marked, and that's a violation as well, improperly marked gill net, and did not have the license tag that's required on gill nets. Staff will tell you that this falls in as a recommendation with the same situation as previously, in that it doesn't necessarily conform to the guidelines that were developed in 2013 for the commission. However, it's certainly pretty close to that. If you look at the guideline table, first of all, Mr. Nelson did not have the permit, the striped bass permit, and he's definitely exceeding any possession limit because he was not allowed to have any striped bass. And the other part is down here, perhaps you could look at, that he doesn't have the eligibility for that permit. You may have noticed that with some of the finfish violations, the first offense is a year probation according to the guidelines. And staff was compelled to make the following recommendation. In accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission place Mr. Nelson on probation for a period of 1 year, September 23rd, 2014, ending on September 22nd, 2015. Any failure on Mr. Nelson's part to obey any of the laws or regulations relating to the marine resources of the Commonwealth during the 1 year probation that ends September 22nd, 2015 would result in Mr. Nelson appearing before the commission for a hearing on license revocation. Staff would like to indicate on behalf of law enforcement and fisheries management that despite the fact this does not fall into the guidelines the way it should, striped bass are also a precious resource, a valued resource by both recreational and commercial fishermen. We in Virginia, as well as other Atlantic coastal states, are going to find out at the end of October that we have to reduce our striped bass harvest both recreationally and commercially. And so there certainly are some real difficulties from both law enforcement perspective and fishery management perspective with these situations that Mr. Nelson has brought to your attention today.
Any questions of staff?
I do have a question.
Ms. Haney.
Mr. O'Reilly, if, I'm just trying to understand, if it was not for the unmarked gill net and the display of, or no display of license, would he still be before us today, or is that?
I think we would have at least tried to ask the commission to look at, if that hadn't happened, the triple offenses, we would have asked the commission to take this into consideration. And, you know, law enforcement would have every ability to bring him forward today.
Any other questions of staff? Mr. Nelson, please step up to the microphone. What can you tell us?
On my understanding, I know that what I've done was wrong, and I was a little mixed up on something. The guy I was selling my stuff to asked if I was catching any rockfish, and I told him I don't know yet. I haven't been out. When I went out, my tag was up in the water, so it scooped it out the net. And then I had nothing to fasten it to that day. So I just came back early in the morning to fish the net, bring it back in and everything. That's when I was found with the carcasses and all that. My father told me, you know, you're not supposed to keep the rockfish and everything. Market told me right away, said you can't do nothing because no tags. And I just really wasn't aware of it. And, you know, if y'all could grant me probation, I'll prove to y'all that I would never do that ever again.
Mr. Cedra.
They were all dead. You know, I was catching nothing but bait, and there was some rockfish that were dead. The ones that were in the boat when they arrived that was mixed up, I had brought my girl with me that day, and we were just running through the net, shaking the fish out, because I just wanted to get it done and put the tags on and everything. And I never even got the chance. It was bright early in the morning. I know I should have probably pulled the net that day instead, but I was trying to make it on the water.
Mr. Zeter.
How long have you had commercial license?
This is my first fishing year, and after I got that ticket, I didn't even go. You can look at it, no reports, I didn't go fishing no more, got a job, and was just waiting for oystering to pay for all the fines that I got.
These gill nets, are you supposed to leave them overnight?
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
I was only a 600-foot net. I had a 1,200-foot license. It was like a little startup kit my dad gave me. But what he told me on the flag poles, he said on one end, because we didn't have the two, he said if they put two crab pot buoys and like a thick cork together, that was regulation. Evidently, the officer told me that wasn't regulation.
How many fish, as my understanding of the striped bass, you have a right to harvest as many fish as you get, tags that you put in their mouth?
Yes, I'm aware of now that they do have tags. You have to get the license, and it's probably like getting a gator license or something like Florida. I don't know. I'm not sure.
So how many fish were you licensed to take?
I wasn't licensed to take no rockfish. I wasn't supposed to have any rockfish on board or nothing. To my knowledge, I didn't know. I just heard what my market was asking. He said, you know, you catching any rockfish? I said, I don't know. I ain't gone yet. Went out that morning, caught some that were dead that I kept and brought them in. Everything that was in my net was dead. But I didn't see I was throwing a dead fish back, you know, for my first time. And he made it well aware of, you know, you need your tag, can't be doing that. So I took them home, I filleted them, and I was going to dump them the next day. And the ones that were found on board, I was going to toss them over as soon as we were done shaking the net, toss them right overboard. There's only 12 of them. Everything on my side, I could toss over. She's on the other side of the net.
Do you fish non-commercially for striper?
And she wasn't able to throw them because of holes in the net.
Do you fish non-commercially for striper?
No, sir.
How long have you been a fish waterman?
I've worked on the water for most of my life with my dad. But basically, I was, you know, told what to do and stuff like that.
Well, you were aware that the striped bass are really highly regulated, right?
Yes.
Okay. And for the person who doesn't have a license,
I wasn't aware of the tag situation.
What was your net out there to catch?
Whatever I could get at the time. I don't know any of the regulations. That was my first time going you know, by myself.
No further questions.
Let me follow up on that train of thought here. Mr. Nelson, I believe you just testified that you grew up basically on the water. Your father's a commercial fisherman?
Yes, sir.
How long have you had a commercial fishing license?
This is my first full year.
And yet you were charged with an oyster violation and convicted in 2010 and again in 2009.
Never had a commercial card or anything. I got everything approved that in my own.
All right.
That was working on some other people's boats in like the James River or York River one time. And I learned the hard way then not to work with those kind of people either.
Kind of mystified at the concept there that there's commercial watermen who would not realize that they need striped bass tags to harvest striped bass commercially. You didn't realize that.
I understand.
Is that your testimony that you did not know that you needed striped bass tags in order to harvest striped bass commercially?
I did not know that.
There were 22 striped bass remains in a cooler on your vessel.
Yes, sir. They were in a trash bag.
They were in a trash bag.
In my cooler.
Why were they in a trash bag in a cooler on your vessel?
When I took them home, after my dad and everybody said, you can't do that, and now I'm supposed to be doing that, I filleted them, put the fillets in my freezer. Then a grandmother in the family didn't want them thrown away in their garden or in their woods, in their yard or anything, so they ended up being in the trunk of the car. But then they ended up going from the trunk of the car a day later, or, you know, the next morning or a day later. I don't really remember, it was a while ago. And I put them back on the boat, and I meant to, you know, dispose them or give them to crab or something, but I never got to it. I went straight to pulling that net in, and just forgot about it.
Please help me to understand this. You caught 22 striped bass,
yes, sir,
that you didn't have a permit for,
yes, sir,
and were to believe that you took them home and filleted them at home, and then decided to use the cooler on your vessel as the garbage can. No?
Well, basically, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
I have no further questions.
I got one more.
Mr. Zedra.
I understand you that you basically taken a different kind of job and you don't really need your license anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, no, not exactly.
Tell me what it is.
It's a seasonal job, but like basically I got my license for oystering, to be honest. I've tried to, you know, go fishing, and once this ticket came in on me, that was it. I just hung everything up until I can get everything straight and right and legit, you know. So I was basically licensed for oystering for when oystering comes in October 1st.
All right, one more question. When you came in from the first night, we're talking about the carcasses right now, the 22 carcasses, and your relative told you that you couldn't do that no more, right?
Yes, sir.
So then you go out the next day to get your net, and you see all these dead stripers in there.
Yes, sir.
Didn't the bell go off like saying, well, you know, my dad said I can't do this.
Yes, sir.
So why did you throw them in a boat instead of throwing them overboard?
I have. I was throwing them over, sir. I have. My girlfriend is here as a witness, if you would like her to be there. She's holding the net on her side. All we're doing is running the net across the boat during the morning time or whatever. It wasn't too windy at all, but you know, it's harder for her to hold the net and then, you know, pick a fish, grab anything, and I didn't have any help. So besides her, she was just holding the net, and whatever few that dropped by her feet is what was in there. And when they boarded the boat, they seen a few of them on her side or whatever, and I helped them dig them all out, and I told them I was going to throw them over, but at the end, when I was done fishing the net.
Okay, I've got further.
Anyone else in the fish? Thank you. Chief O'Reilly, one more time here with the staff recommendation here. Because, as I understand, due to the severity of the multiple offenses that are so interrelated, the staff recommendation is 1 year of revocation.
The staff is held right now to one-year probation because we do not have anything in the matrix. And I know as a commission, you would want us to try and stick with the process we have. However, in this situation, I think both law enforcement and fisheries management would say that there could be differing offenses here. And the testimony of Mr. Nelson, if staff were able to modify its recommendation, we certainly would say 1 year revocation. In fact, that's the way this started out until we understood that we have these guidelines to go by. But that's why you as a commission are able to say the staff recommendation, for example, as you did previously, is inadequate. So I'll read the staff recommendation the way it stands and then leave it up to the commission. Staff recommendation in accordance with Section 282.232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission place Mr. Nelson on probation for a period of 1 year from September 23, 2014 until September 22, 2015. Any failure on Mr. Nelson's part to obey any laws or the regulations relating to the marine resources of the Commonwealth during the one-year probation would result in Mr. Nelson appearing before the commission for a hearing on license revocation.
Yes, please.
Mr. Green?
Yes, ma'am.
Just as to him explaining that the fish were still on the bottom of the boat and he hadn't had a chance to toss them over, did you observe, were there actually bait fish in the boat? Is that what he was targeting?
There was a few other types of fish. I was not on scene, but the officers viewed mainly striped bass. And to point out, this was a complaint, several complaints, for this specific reason. And when they were boarded, when the vessel was boarded, exactly what the complaint came in was found. So this was, we had details of this going on. We had multiple calls, multiple days, the whole works. And we responded to a complaint. And usually, as you know, the complaints, you don't respond right then. It takes a day or two to get to the complaint. Sometimes in priorities, you had to prioritize more severe calls, rescues, and stuff like that. We've dealt with Mr. Nelson. I was looking at his criminal history. Since 2012, he's had a commercial oyster license and the registration. His name has come across my desk many times in situations since then as a commercial fisher.
There's two Chris Nelson, and y'all had a
But this was a complaint on several days. We had the vessel, name, which matched, the individual's name, which matched, when we boarded while they were engaged in fishing.
I'm sorry. I'd like to bring the conversation back to actual events here and activities that resulted in these convictions.
I was asking the question because if he was targeting bait fish, that is a normal process to shake the fish in the boat. And I could understand what he was saying in that situation if he was targeting bait fish.
Mr. Zutra.
I'd just like to discuss a little bit. You know, I think everybody knows that striped bass is a big regulated industry, and even for the recreational fishermen. And had the Coast Guard caught him with 12 fish, stripers, and 22 carcasses, he'd be in the federal penitentiary right now. They'd take his boat, they'd give him a $100,000 plus fine, and he'd be, you know, in a pinstripe suit for a while. And it's difficult for me to believe, and here we back to the credibility issue of the testimony, that a guy that's a waterman that's I guess what really troubles me is this, is, you know, you catch these fish, you take them home, and your parents or somebody says, hey, man, you can't do that. So what's the logical thing to do? Is to fillet them and put them in your freezer to eat? I don't think that's the logical thing to do. I think, especially as a waterman, and be cognizant of, you know, the industry, is that if that would have happened to me, and I truly did not know that, would have taken and put in those carp, those fish, either throw them back in the, into the water or throw them into the trash can or something like that. I think there's a statement there by filleting the fish and put them in your freezer, and then, you know, you got to say, oh, man, I'm lucky I didn't get caught yesterday, you know, and then go out there the next day and see all these striped bass. I would have fear in my heart that when I saw that striped bass come into my boat, I'd grab that thing and throw them out of there, because I'd thank God that it didn't get caught the day before, not leave those bass in there. And the way it happens is the officers, you know, catch them in the act. So I think it's a lot more egregious, and it requires a lot more stiffer punishment than the recommendation of the staff, and I'll make that an appropriate motion.
Ms. Nelson, matters before the commission. The commission is having a discussion.
Let me expand on that a little bit here. I think it's serious enough to have a gill net out there in the condition it was in, it unmarked, and I think anybody with a gill net license understands marking in a commercial sense. To have 12 striped bass on board under the circumstances that you've already laid out there is another very serious thing. These 22 fish carcasses, I have a hard time believing they were taken home and that they were filleted and that the carcasses ended up back on the boat. Can't quite buy that argument there, Mr. Nelson. I think it's much more likely here that they're filleted on board here. One of the other things that really strikes me is that Mr. Nelson's testimony was that his buyer asked him if he had any striped bass. The implication is, a number of different ways to read that, but the implication is that this isn't the first time Mr. Nelson has come to his buyer with striped bass. So to that end, I can't go with a one-year probation. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe better minds than mine can think one up.
I would move that we revoke his license for a year and then put him on probation for a year thereafter that. And then all those title privileges that you talk about.
All right. So your motion is the 1 year revocation of his licenses and title fishing privileges followed by 1 year probation.
Yes.
That's the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Ms. Neal. Is there further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any no votes?
No.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously. Mr. Nelson, your licenses are revoked for a year. If you go with the officer, he will give you documentation on how to appeal your the commission's decision.